This is Voyager Revisited, a podcast on the Incomparable Network dedicated to the Star Trek Voyager series. I'm Jean McDonald, and for each episode, I invite a Star Trek fan to come and talk about Voyager. On this episode, I am very pleased to welcome Georgia Dow. Georgia, welcome to Voyager Revisited.
Thank you for having me.
I'm very excited. You were on my list when I planned this podcast of people who I thought would be interesting to have as a guest. And maybe before we dive into Star Trek, why don't you tell the listeners a bit about yourself?
Yeah, for sure. So I've done, if you listen to the Incomparable shows, I'm on a few of them and enjoy that love Star Trek. And I'm also a psychotherapist, and I also used to write for technology, but do a whole bunch of technology podcasts as well. And I've just started a YouTube series that deals with mental health, psychotherapy, anxiety primarily, and depression, and different reaction videos of how a therapist reacts to different shows that are out there, which is new and kind of fun. You can find it on YouTube. Just look up Georgia Dow.
That's great. I am a fan of your channel, and I think it's a great resource for people who want to know or want more information or just want to hear about something that they might be struggling with or someone that they love is struggling with. So I salute you and appreciate that you're putting the time in to share your expertise with the world.
Thank you very much.
Of course, this is not the Psychotherapy Revisited podcast, although it definitely some themes I think we might get into based on what we've watched as our homework, our Voyager homework this week. But
Voyager homework this week.
But you say you love Star Trek. So how long have you loved Star Trek?
I love, like, all the way from, like, the original Star Trek. And I used to watch that all the time when I was little. Mm-hmm. And I loved it. Like, I loved it. I loved the simplicity of it, the themes that were there about just human nature and the way that we see ourselves and where we are in the world. Loved Spock and Kirk and McCoy and how they interacted with each other. And it was, again, I don't know if it was very pro-female at that time. As I look back, I'm more and more critical on the, it was very pro-species. I don't know how pro-female, but, they tried. They did have a first officer, which was female. And so when that brings me to, I liked the new Next Generation. This is going to be my Star Trek thing. Liked the Next Generation. Mm-hmm. I enjoyed it. And we just rewatched the episodes, but just, you know, the ones that are, you should watch. Mm-hmm. So we missed out on the ones that are kind of the, you know, filler episodes that nothing's really happening. And I really enjoyed it in that stream of it. And I think that some of the Next Generation is really good. And Deep Space Nine, I watched and I liked it. And I liked it more as it went along. There was a little bit, it was less copacetic. Like there was more turmoil and there was more interaction, which I thought was interesting. Mm-hmm. And I watched Enterprise. I don't know about that. I can't really say that I was a fan. I watched even the Picard show. Mm-hmm. I don't know what it was called, but I did not enjoy that at all. I won't go into why. Mm-hmm. And when Voyager came out, I was really, really excited. Like, exceptionally excited to have a, you know, female as captain. Mm-hmm. I think that she did a brilliant job. I really like her, the way that she took on the role. I thought it was amazing. Mm-hmm. Though I was quite saddened when I found out how she interacted with
Jerry Ryan.
Thank you.
Yeah.
That was sad. And that.
Yeah, I think that was traumatic for the entire Star Trek family to know that favorite characters had conflict behind the scenes.
And it was really bad conflict. It wasn't just like you know, William Shatner being difficult with everyone and a narcissist with everyone.
Mm-hmm.
But this was kind of targeted bullying. And I found that was really hard because these are two characters that I enjoyed quite a lot. And I love Janeway. Mm-hmm. I thought that she did just such an epic, you know, like I would always go like, fire phasers. Like I would constantly be doing that. Every time she does it, I do it back. Fire phasers. I just loved it. And, but I when I watched it, it was in my head. And every time they interacted, then I was taken out of that going how, oh yeah, I could see the, there's a little bit of a not a smile, a little grimace. And because I'm a therapist, I'm now reading all these micro expressions and I'm like, ah, damn. So that was the hard part for me when I was watching the episode. So that was going on while I'm dealing with the psychology and everything that's happening during the episode. Mm-hmm. So that's also an interesting kind of thing, which you've probably now already, because you've been watching it every week, I would assume that that is now easier for you because you have a, you can place it somewhere.
Yeah.
Separate from the show.
I do. I mean, it's been a while since I, you know, was made aware of what was going on. And I, you know, yes, Janeway is the reason that I watched Voyager, like from the beginning.
Right.
I mean, I came to have additional very favorite characters, but she's what makes Voyager Voyager. And it's interesting. There's an episode further on, I think, I can't remember the exact season episode number, but somebody who came on the podcast really insisted that we watch it. And I hadn't remembered it that well, but there's one called One. No, not One. It's called Conspiracy of One. Hmm. Something. It's terrible. The Voyager Conspiracy, I think that's what it's called. But basically, we're seven... really loses it by downloading too much information into her brain. And, you know, she can make connections everywhere, like where things are going wrong, or where things have gone wrong. She, because she has so much data at her, fingertips, she can see conspiracies where there are none. And Janeway, especially, that, you know, Janeway was, so it's a very antagonistic episode between the two of them, but it resolves quite beautifully. So, you know, I'm thinking about rewatching that, with that in mind, whether I see grimaces or not, because throughout the, series, once Seven is there, Janeway is supposed to be her mentor and kind of guardian. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that makes it, gives it an extra twist of,
complexity.
And, you know, anyway, but yeah, I don't know. I definitely, there's shows that I don't watch anymore because of certain characters or certain writers, like that just, I can't stop thinking about something that, you know, I've found out they've done or did, but I haven't stopped watching everything.
So. No. And again, it was bullying, which again, I'm not saying that that makes it okay, but it does it still happened in my head.
Mm-hmm.
So I had a little bit of that kind of going on at the same time as everything else of watching it.
Mm-hmm.
But I could still enjoy the show.
I definitely in my rewatches have come to appreciate the Seven of Nine character so much more. And, you know, I think that, you know, initially I also had this like feeling of like, really? They're bringing a blonde in a skin tight suit to like jazz up the franchise. I find that insulting, you know,
which is why they did it.
Yes.
Like they did. Right? They didn't like and the interesting thing is most of the Borg are not gorgeous.
No.
Right? Like we could just state when we look at Borg, we don't think gorgeous.
Yeah.
And she's gorgeous.
Yeah.
She's absolutely stunning and in a beautiful suit. But, you know, yeah. she is the gorgeous one. And so, yeah, it wasn't enough to have,
Star Trek. It's Star Trek, right. But yeah, you know, over time and over multiple watching, I began to, you know, appreciate her more, the character, the actress, like that it was, really well written, and they, you know, I have a little bit of resentment towards Star Trek for various things, you know, that they did. And like, for example, in Next Generation, I never really liked the character of Troi, and partially because I felt like they dumbed her down. Like, she was not that she was dumb, but she was wearing this non, you know, standard uniform, and had all this hair, and I just felt like, you know, one of my favorite episodes with her is when she does get to wear the actual uniform, and that actually goes with Seven as well. There's an episode where she travels to the future, you know, she's on some mission, time travel mission, and she's just wearing the regular, like, science uniform in blue. And I'm like, see, she looks fine in a uniform. She looks, right. You know, and, right. You know, the uniforms are there for a reason. Uniforms, you know, confer credibility and rank and all sorts of things. So the female characters who are not given regular uniforms, that's a message that we're being given. But I did also, I really liked in Picard, when Seven is a character in Picard, that she's wearing clothes now. Like, she's wearing cool clothes. She looks cool.
Right,
and
right,
I just was happy to see her have a different, you know, vibe than she did when she was on Voyager.
Yeah. So. Yeah, exactly.
But besides the captain, do you have any other favorite characters?
So I really like Chakotay. I had wished that he did more of an evolution and we kind of played more into who he was. And I don't think that he was really given a lot of, like, I think that they did not properly utilize when he started out, there was this, some animosity, there was some turmoil. And I think that they really didn't get into that. But I enjoyed him as a character. I think that he was stabilizing. And then, of course, there was Tukov, which I love, and I found him, but also, like, even the animosity between him and Chakotay did not really fully, like,
right.
It was there, but they didn't really get into what the dynamics, the psychology of what happens when you work with someone that you feel like they maybe should not be given the rank that they have. Mm-hmm. That I think that they don't really get into the true depth of what can happen. And so I enjoyed watching, you know, Chakotay in this episode have to go to Tukov and actually ask him, you know, I need your help. Can you help me? Because I understand that you might see this from a way that I don't see it.
Yes.
But because they don't really fully get into how painful that is.
Yeah.
And it's very painful. You believe that you should get something and you don't, and it's illogical to you. You could see how that would be very bothersome. But I did really enjoy that interaction because of it, because it's two characters that I enjoy quite a lot that are playing against each other, which I always love.
Yeah. I think that Tuvok is one of the best Vulcans, because he.
Ooh, that's strong language.
Well, I said one of the best. There could be many.
Oh, okay.
but he is, because he's one of the most logical, but he does, He does have a lot of strong episodes that open up the fact that, you know, logic is sometimes just a excuse for covering up something that they actually do have feelings about. But I, one of the things I do like about him is that he became a second officer, not first, when the two crews joined together. And it, the fact that he has so much trust in Janeway, even though she's not always logical, and
no,
he,
not always logical.
You know, he does the, I feel like he, you know, it's kind of similar to Kirk and Spock, where obviously Kirk is not the logic, captain, but, and Spock doesn't always approve of what he does, but he still is very devoted to him. I guess that's it. So Tuvok is devoted to Captain Janeway, and I like him for that. I do.
Right, he's respectful even if he disagrees.
Yes, and I do like Chakotay as well, as feel that he got short shrift in the writer's room for, you know, he could have had a lot more interesting personal development arcs. They sort of squish it all at the beginning. It doesn't even totally make sense. It's hard to picture him as the commander of a rebel ship because he doesn't seem like a rebel exactly. I don't know.
No, he very quickly leaves any of his rebel inclinations,
mm-hmm.
which, yes, I don't think that would have happened.
Yeah. So, but again, I think he's an interesting character. I also think the actor is really great, and he's handsome. He's very handsome.
Yeah.
So we just did an episode, kind of Valentine's Day special, about the episode where Janeway and Chakotay are stranded on a planet together, and it's
right.
It's like, right. Oh, this could have been its own series.
That was very romantic. And then I felt very saddened when then he becomes the romantic partner, you know,
mm-hmm.
of Seven of Nine.
Yeah.
So I'm like, oh, that's what happened. Why would you like, that's sad.
Yeah.
But I guess they have to kind of go through it. And I apologize for calling Tuvok. I think I called him Tukov. I'm dyslexic. It's going to happen all the time.
It's okay.
I'm going to call things improperly. Just for everyone that cringed. I apologize, but I'll do that all the time.
It's okay.
So, continue on.
It's okay. I like to think of him as sort of a Russian Vulcan now.
That would be very interesting. Yeah.
But, yeah. So, that... I do agree there. It was a bit of a disconnect there towards the end of the series to put those two characters together. And even if Janeway and Chakotay could not be a couple.
They should have then put through that in the story.
Yeah.
It could have been a little love triangle thing.
Oh,
I would have been fine with that. It happens in real life when you work together a lot.
Yes.
But, you know,
well,
don't just delete it.
It's not the most romantic show. This is for sure.
This is true.
But yeah, so we have been alluding to our homework, which was the episode called Night, Season 5, Episode 1. And I suggested it to you because I feel like it's got some pretty heavy themes of mental wellness to unpacked. And also I thought, just thinking about what the crew is going through in this episode, which is they've been already like almost 2 months into a section of space that has absolutely no stellar, like anything, like no stars, no galaxies, no planets, no other ships, or so they think. And it's just purely black. Because when I look out the window in my mind from a spaceship, you know, I do see stars. Stars are, when they're traveling, especially at warp, you see stars whizzing by. But to me, it looks also quite vast and empty. I don't know how I would deal with that. But to have nothing out your window nothing to see, nothing changing for that amount of time was a really interesting setup to put the crew into. And I mean, there is a villain in the episode, but the true thing that they're up against is themselves in mm-hmm. a situation that they've never been in before. And so what did you think of this episode? Did you like it?
Yeah, I thought it was I can't say that it was one of my favorite episodes, because mm-hmm. it was an episode that I don't think that they went into the full psyche of what could happen. I think mm-hmm. that it was such an interesting premise of, and so telling to today, mm-hmm. where a lot of the things that keep us busy, that give us distractions, have been taken from us.
Mm-hmm.
And they went through very similar things than what we are going through today. So I think it was perfectly apropos for our, you know,
yeah,
during pandemic, post-pandemic kind of world of where we are at,
mm-hmm.
where they, you know, they're trying to make sure that there's enough food, that they don't have the same distractions. And so you end up with a whole bunch of type A personalities, people that are used to doing, keeping busy, having objectives and jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And then what happens when everything that is who you are is taken from you? And now we are in a closed space with other people. And I think that they touched upon, you know, so many of the aspects of what happens to people when we have that taken away. If you are a worrier, now you have more time to worry, right? Mm-hmm. What are you going to do? You're going to sit at home and you're going to worry. If you are hard on yourself, now you're going to start feeling this frustration and wanting to blame and yell at others. And you can see these relationships where they're being snippy, where you know, they're having this discussion and they're picking at each other. And this is all completely accurate. They did a great job of portraying, to a small extent, because this can get much worse. And it was already pretty bad by the middle of the episode. You could see that it was pretty bad. But that is what happens to us when we're stuck without the things that make us who we are.
Mm-hmm.
We can start to spin. And I thought that that's something that's really important. And I'm really happy that they showed all of the different pieces of what is important to keep us feeling stable and active. And I loved their methodology of dealing with it. I loved how now suddenly Neelix, who not one of my favorite characters. I know some people love Neelix, but I'm like, I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Send the hate mail to Jean.
Yes.
she'll forward it to me. Don't worry. She'll forward it to me.
Just do another Neelix appreciation episode.
Right.
We've done one. And
have you done one?
Yeah, we did one.
How do you find, can I ask you, do most people love Neelix?
No.
Am I on the minority?
Oh, no. I think you're in the majority.
Oh.
But
oh.
I think it, you know, he's a character that was written to be annoying. So you're right to be annoyed by him. But he also has layers, you know, like an onion. The episode that we did a few episodes back is about, it was a Neelix and Tuvok episode that was great. Like the banter between those two is often, you know, a source of amusement, but you realize that Neelix has important, valuable qualities that Tuvok does not have. Like, he gets people on his side in a way that Tuvok never can, because he, you know, and that it was my pal and yours, James Dempsey, who was on the show. Aww. And James said, look at what Neelix has been through. He's, you know, he lost his entire family and his, like, basically his entire species. And the fact that he can be at all chipper is actually, you know, quite a testament, you know, to his resiliency and his care for other people. And anyway, Neelix went up a few notches in my view, because I started out feeling what, you know, exactly as you expressed. And even in my, I've got a spreadsheet of all the Voyager episodes that I give tiny synopses and my ratings on whether people should watch them or not. And I had in the initial spreadsheet, I made a column just called Neelix. So if Neelix was in the show, like, and you wanted to skip all the Neelix heavy shows, you could, but I've gotten rid of that because I'm not skipping them anymore. And, I'm in the Neelix Appreciation Society where I was not before, but I understand. I totally understand.
But well, in this episode, it did show that when in times of scarcity, difficulty, trauma, that you know, to be able to have fun and deal with social situations is important. Like when they did the round table, he's the one that gave some of the most poignant and important suggestions.
Yeah.
Which I thought was really cool because he doesn't usually get that much respect from the crew.
Right.
He's usually well tolerated, you know, but he really gave important suggestions that, you know, we need to come together. We need to keep busy. We need to do things to increase morale. And the morale of the ship does, your working environment can either make or break a situation. If you're feeling good, you are going to perform better. You are going to trust each other. You're going to be able to come together during the times of a crisis. And so I thought that that was really interesting to be able to watch that as well. And he, though, had frustrations and issues, when, you know, like you could see other people completely turning upon each other and being frustrated where they were not before. And that also is something that happens.
Yeah. Yeah. So they, and Neelix is a, I thought it was interesting, like the different varieties of sort of mental breakdown that they were, that they were portraying in this. They say, you know, right at the outset, Janeway isn't even in the episode. And she's secluded herself in her quarters. And that's one reaction. They use terms like stir crazy, you know, which is like true. I think that it, for whatever definition of stir crazy, that this would bring out that reaction being 53 days like without your normal setup and nothing to do. But then they have Neelix actually have like when he first, you know, appears, like even though he's given all these good suggestions and he's trying to keep morale up, they show him waking up, you know, hyperventilating,
a mild panic attack,
right?
Yeah, he has a panic attack because of his world has changed, right?
Yeah.
And you can take that for a small amount of time, but you know, he wasn't used to, you know, not seeing anything.
Yeah.
And it is a true statement of when there's an unknown factor that plays upon us, we are more prone to having our body go through a fight or flight response to that, which is normal. If you have a panic attack, it is normal. It is common. There's nothing wrong with you. Many people actually think that they do go, like he went to the doctor. And usually people do. Often people think that they're having a heart attack, perhaps dying, if they experience their first panic attack, because it's such a strange response. It's different than an anxiety attack. Your body really is going into a full flight or flight with a feeling of dread and fear and something bad is going to happen. And that's a very scary scenario to go through. And so many people go to the doctor.
Yeah.
Just like he did.
Yeah. And he got the doctor gave him a sedative, said it will help you breathe more normally. And he said, yes, you're experiencing nihilophobia, which I wrote down.
Yes.
I looked it up.
Yes.
Because I wanted to be up on the latest on nihilophobia. And if you Google nihilophobia, you get all the results are from Star Trek episode 1 of season 5. They say, well, it's not a real, it's not a documented official phobia. It's a Star Trek thing. And I was like, oh, so just FYI.
The interesting thing is that I don't know why they did not use like the fear, like an actual fear.
Yeah.
Because the fear of the unknown,
mm-hmm.
Or the fear of like space, mm-hmm. right? Of vastness, right? These are fears that you can have.
Mm-hmm.
Though, and I think that they're pretty close, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Or the fear of, like, so I'm not sure why they didn't. Again, they can totally do that. It's Star Trek. They make up languages. They can completely go ahead and create something. But it was just kind of interesting.
Yeah.
All depends on, you know, your type of things that you feel anxiety towards versus not. Some people have the fear of open spaces versus, which is agoraphobia. And some people have this fear of tight spaces,
mm-hmm.
which is claustrophobia. And they're all primal. Mm-hmm. They all go back to, you know, our brains have not evolved in 150,000 years.
Mm-hmm.
And so we do, like being trapped, having all of the, like, this would have happened. I don't believe that it would have happened for a crew this quickly. I think that the timeline is off.
Mm.
Don't think that this would happen in 50 days or 2 months or even probably 3 or 4 months.
Mm-hmm.
I think that if this had been what had happened within 6 months to a year, that's when, because they're still, again, they're a tight-knit group of things that they still have mm-hmm. most of the stuff that they can do. Their world does not change much.
Yeah. Right?
They're still on a spaceship stuck together.
True.
So they've already gone through most of the change,
mm-hmm.
and then just not seeing stars and not having to go to away missions, which for most of the crew, they don't do.
Right.
And again, there's like, you know what, 12 to 25 people that we get to see on the show that do anything.
Right.
But most of them would not. So I think for most of them, the world did not change at all.
Mm.
So it would have been a difference compared to what we're going through.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it would have taken a little, like if they had just said, you know, whatever, it's a year. I don't think that it would have made a huge difference.
To the story, yeah.
Yes, 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 yeah. Exactly.
Well, it's interesting. So, as you say, like, they lay all these things out that are interesting and very relatable about stress, this kind of stress and how it affects people. But, of course, the whole episode can't be about that. I mean, it right. could be.
Right.
It could be.
It could be, but I think that people would find that probably a little bit dull.
So,
that it's Star Trek. Yes.
One of the things about this episode that's noteworthy for, you know, Voyager trivia is this is the first appearance of the Captain Proton holodeck
right.
recreation, which ends up playing a role in several other episodes later on. But I always enjoyed Captain Proton. I thought mm-hmm. just the notion of these 24th century space cadets, literally, you know, returning to the 20th century and recreating what space would be like, what it would like be like to battle evil villains in space with big robots and stuff like that. It's good comic relief, I think, throughout Voyager. But in this particular episode, that's where they first discover that they aren't totally alone. First of all, I do think that's really cool that the next thing that happens to them after they've, you know, been discussing the situation they're in is that they lose all their power. So now the whole ship is dark. And it's like, could it get any worse?
Right.
The holodeck is still holodecking, I guess. I'm not totally sure how that works. And
Yeah, that is a good point. I didn't actually even catch that. That was really a good, good catch, because I'm sure that the holodeck uses up quite a good deal
right.
of power.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hmm.
But the power is out in the simulation. Like, it's sort of, it's odd. Anyway, you know, it wouldn't be a Star Trek episode if we couldn't pick apart some of the details of how things
stuff
work.
That doesn't work. Yeah.
Because it does give Paris the opportunity to get out a flashlight. And try to figure out how to use a flashlight, but they discover there is a creature in the holodeck, and it kind of it does come after him and injures him. And this is when the story gets going. And they've lost power. There's creatures on the ship. And that's when Janeway appears outside of her quarters. I mean, there was the discussion that Chakotay had trying to get her to come out of her quarters. But I thought it was interesting that the first time we see her doing something besides being in a total dark place, literal and figurative, is that she has a big phaser gun. And she, you know, she has something to do now.
Yes. Yes.
Right.
She can do that thing to be able to reset. Like, she feels this guilt of the choice that she had made and its effect on her whole crew. And so she decides, which some people do, to kind of go into the cave, which is a common thing that we can do. For some people, they want to kind of go out of the cave. And some of us are more, and I think I lean more towards, if I'm in a feeling of trauma, just wanting to kind of go into the cave and not have to pretend that everything is okay, which is exhausting. And I'll come out when, you know, there's light out. And for her, there was this call to, now she can rescue and show everyone and kind of make a retribution. And so she ends up with this huge phaser gun. I don't know what kind of gun she had.
Yeah.
But this huge gun.
Phaser
kind
rifle.
Of Rambo faction. Yes. Aliens, like Ripley. Like, she can now go out and fix things.
Yeah.
And feel good. And then that kind of brings her out of this funk that she was in from before.
Yeah.
And remember her purpose and be able to experience that.
Yes. And, you know, she's – then you have like sort of classic Star Trek story line of, well, there's some aliens doing this, and then there's this other kind of alien coming to – rescue them, but has, you know, ulterior motives. And, but bringing the, you know, the mail on guy, onto the transport engineer, bringing him on and trying to, work with him. You know, you see Janeway, it's like, she's back in the saddle, basically, of being the captain who is, good with working with other species and, you know, good at diplomacy. And she's trying to make connection with this really, you know, gross looking big creature. I mean, they do a good job with the costuming on that guy. And he's just shutting her down. He's nothing like her. He's like, give me that creature you have in your sick bay. And she's like, no, we don't do that. And so they're kind of at an impasse. And then she gets to talk to the alien in sick bay. And again, you have to admire the universal translator because
pretty amazing.
That's before, you know, as far as they knew, nothing was in this space. And right. Now they find out there's a whole civilization of creatures that live in the void. And yeah, it's Starfleet protecting the threatened creatures who are being threatened by the bad guy. And she finds out, like, what's really going on, that this Malon ship, it's really only this guy, is dumping antimatter waste in the void, using it as a dump, and it's killing the local population. So that could be a setup on, you know, Star Trek, the original series, even, you know.
Yes.
And
where they have a social commentary along with all of the, you know, like, she could choose to have just jumped in immediately with given this offer, you know, to be able to get out of this without even having to worry or to do the moral and ethical thing to be able to help with it. And I loved that that reminded me a lot of, you know, old school Star Trek, where there's this, you know, benefit to us or should we do the right thing? And that kind of question of, you know, what is our humanity?
Right. And they, you know, they even go to the Star Trek, you know, level of Starfleet can fix this problem because we have technology. Let's give you our antimatter detoxification technology. And then, you know, we've solved this problem, you know, years ago. And, yes. We, as members of Starfleet, we are here to spread the technology light on your problem. Yes. And, yes. You know, it brings in the very real issue, which is, well, maybe we don't want that technology, or I don't want it because I have a good thing going here. I dump my toxic waste. I cut my expenses in half, and I'm not giving up my advantage. So, ta-ta.
Yes. No, I loved that. I love that they went through, but this is profitable for me.
Yeah.
And the shock of everyone's response. But I went, wow, like that is, they really did go through the why the environment or taking care of climate change or anything else, why there's such a great push from large industries to try to dismiss, invalidate, not deal with, because this is what our system of economy is based upon.
Right.
And I thought that that was a really, like, you know, I don't even remember when this, what year this came out.
Brain.
1998. Yeah. And I'm like, yeah, that is so true to what was happening then, but we didn't discuss. And we now know that, you know, where information comes from and why and what it is pushed by.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that that was really telling. They were ahead of the curve.
Yeah.
Again, Star Trek makes a perfect social commentary.
Yes.
On the world and what we are dealing with.
Right. And then it does, you know, it loops back into Janeway's original, you know, conundrum or crisis of faith in herself. So the fact that she made the decision in the first episode to strand them in the Delta Quadrant rather than take a way home that would leave another race in peril. She, you know, that comes up frequently. Less so, you know, the longer the series goes on, but certainly sometimes there's crew resentment about it. But she's just questioning herself, taking the high road was a sacrifice for everybody, that she made a decision for.
Choice.
So yeah. She comes up with a plan where she's going to take a shuttle separately and close up this vortex that this Malon trash dumpster has been using after Voyager gets through it. And this, you know, so it does, you know, link back to her original problem in the show, which is that she's questioning her motive. So she has an option. She thinks she has an option to make a choice where everybody doesn't have to sacrifice just her. It's a pretty cool scene where she comes onto the bridge for the first time in the whole episode.
Yeah.
And everybody is there. It's just one of those rousing, you know, here's everybody's together on the bridge finally. And, is giving orders for this plan, and everybody is declining to follow her orders.
You see, I had quite a mixed reaction to everyone not, like pretty much disrespecting her orders. I think that you know, I thought it was, like, partially beautiful that they cared enough about her to not want to take the risk instead of having her sacrifice herself. Which she said, oh, no, don't worry. I will find my way out.
Mm-hmm.
But we know that she had already spoken to Chakotay about taking over the captainship. So, and his comfort level with that beforehand. So we know that she might not be coming back if she does this. But I went back to how she took everyone mutinying against her. And she was very happy about it. And then I went to, if this was any of the other captains, what would have been their reaction? Because she was smiling after and like, oh, how loving. And I'm like, I don't know that that would be my reaction, even if I was wrong to give an order. Even if it saved me, how would I feel about my crew?
Yeah.
Completely mutinying me, disrespecting my order. And they don't, like she said, I'm going to find my way out. Don't dismiss me. I'm going to find my way out. Now, again, Chakotay knows, but he's the only one that we know of, that we've seen, that has said this is a suicide mission that she's planned on. And so I was like, this bothers me. Bothers me as her being a female captain and being disrespected to this level by everyone. And that she's just fine with it. And now how do you trust your crew? I don't know what your feeling was to that, Jean, but I had that feeling of like, no, I would not be too okay with this.
Yeah, I think...
Again, it's Star Trek. So it does happen.
Yeah, it does.
Like I believe it's happened to Kirk a few times, too. It's not just Janeway that's had this happen.
No.
But...
Yeah, it's TV, for one thing. So, you know, it is not actually a military organization. It is a television episode. So they don't treat it with the seriousness that they ought to in real life. There have been, you know, moments where Janeway has been disobeyed before. And... Yeah. There's, I mean, that episode with Janeway and Chakotay stuck on the planet, Resolutions, she tells them, don't try to get a cure for us. It's too dangerous. Just keep going and we'll stay here. And of course, once she's not the captain on the ship anymore.
That's where I was going to say is that once she's left, though, there's a new captain. So
right.
I'm like, oh, that's fair.
Right.
The other captain can choose to do whatever they want because they're captain. She has no rank
right.
anymore.
Right. Yes. And, but, you know, the crew has a history of not leaving Janeway behind, even when she's, you know, insistent upon it. But it's true. I hadn't really thought, to be honest, I hadn't really thought of it that way. But you're absolutely right. And because it is Voyagers, let's say, and not Deep Space Nine, it's not a of much consequence for the rest of the series. You know, she doesn't go every week thinking, oh, they might not obey my orders since they've already done that once. You know, it's sort of forgotten as a background piece.
And she probably knows they did it out of love, which is fair, right?
Yeah.
This is a loving act, not a, you know, they're trying to take over the captainship. They're trying to keep her, which,
yeah,
you know.
I mean.
It still did. I was a little.
Yeah.
I was like,
no, I can totally, I totally get that. And you know, of course, the they need Janeway. I mean, it's love, and there's also, you know, the fact that she's the captain that's getting them through this. And you know, how would things be? They still have a long way to go. They don't know that the series is only 7 years. I don't know at this point how much they've shaved off the 70-year estimate that they had initially. So they may not also be willing to give her up that easily as the leader of the ship. And if she doesn't stay on the ship, if they don't come up with another plan, which of course they do immediately, and even that plan gets torpedoed literally so they're going to ride the sonic wave, I don't know how, through the vortex. But if she isn't there, she doesn't get to say time to take out the garbage, which I think is
a
great moment.
Yeah, so, exactly.
And that's pretty much the ending. I mean, they get through the vortex, they close the vortex. And we will not see them meet up with the Melon, you know, local Melon leaders to give them their antimatter detox technology, but we assume that's what's going to happen. But the episode ends with them, aha, we see stars, you know, and yes. everybody's face yes. lights up.
Yes.
Literally.
Yes, the world is back the way that it's supposed to be.
Yeah.
And we get to continue our journey with 2 extra years shaved off.
Yes. So, but they did shoot quite a few photon torpedoes. And mm-hmm. at this point, they are, for those who keep track, they theoretically had only 38. Photon torpedoes are a limited asset, not like phaser fire. And so they've already used up their 38 now.
Oh, I did not know that.
Yes. Apparently, I mean, they don't seem to know it either, since they used 2 more than they said they had.
Oh, do they? Oh,
back goodness. In season
there
one.
We
but
there we go.
Again, if it wasn't for little details like this that we can pick apart, it wouldn't be Star Trek.
No, that's the fun. That is the fun part. Yeah. Now I'm going to be listening for every time that they use one to see how far they go over, which I'm sure someone will tweet me saying how many, but I'm actually curious to find out. So if you know,
yeah.
I would like to know.
Yeah, well, Voyager Revisited, the Twitter account will be following you, and we will tweet about this. So you too can get replies via Twitter from Star Trek Twitter.
Awesome.
But yeah, well, I think that all things considered, this was a very good look at some of the mental health challenges of being in space and making big decisions and feeling, you know, having second thoughts and having anxiety. I did like mm-hmm. when Neelix said, when the doctor said something about anxiety, and he said, anxiety is when I burn a pot roast.
right. This was much more than that. But it is one of the things that people go through when they're dealing with having to be enclosed with other people for long points of time. It's one of the larger issues. And I don't think that we really understand, because most of us, and well, until now, are not in such a circumstance. But I think that now we're much more, I think that this episode now has a much stronger hit to mm-hmm. what happens, and that understanding of, oh yeah, I totally get how this exactly would be how it is. And so I think it's even a more important episode these days than it would have been.
Yes, I absolutely agree. And you watch it, having been through the year that we've been through, it's not that hard a jump to make to imagine mm-hmm. how people would feel with really, I think the sameness is the everything. We joke a lot about losing track of what day or what month it even is, because we get so little true, like, outside stimulation. The fact that everything is running at, you know, peak fitness or whatever, the warp core is great, all the sensors are fine, everything's they're just doing the same thing day after day, you know, they show very frequently how, like, there's almost nobody on the bridge because there's nothing to do. You know,
So,
that I feel like, you know, in our year of pandemic isolation, we can relate. We would like to have holodecks, but at least we have Zoom.
Yes, we get as close as we can to simulating that.
Yeah. And I'm glad you could take the time and watch Star Trek with me, Georgia. I really appreciate it.
It was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun, and I was happy to get to watch an episode of Voyager. I was like, I have to do my homework?
Yes.
Which was lovely. So thank you so much, Jean, for inviting me on.
It was really great to have you. And thank you, listeners, for being here. You can find Voyager Revisited online at voyagercast.com. You can follow us on Twitter and on micro.blog at Voyager_cast. And if you like this podcast, you might want to check out all the other great shows at theincomparable.com and even consider becoming a member, which gets you access to bonus episodes, bootlegs, and our special members-only Slack, where you can find me chatting about all things Star Trek with other podcasters and fans. I will be back in a couple weeks with another guest to discuss Star Trek Voyager. Until then, time's up.